Good morning, and welcome to The Mental Breakdown. I'm Dr. Bernie Wilkinson.
I'm Dr. Richard Marshall.
And today we're going to talk about what happens when mental illness complicates a relationship. Over the last couple of weeks, we have been really focused on relationships and how to have healthy relationships and what happens when relationships aren't as healthy as they otherwise could or should be. Mm-hmm. But today we're going to really take a turn and talk about some other issues that really complicate relationships and make relationships a challenge. And that is the introduction of mental illness in relationships.
Yeah, throughout the past 2 weeks, the first week we talked about how to have a healthy, happy marriage relationship. In the second week, this past week, we talked about what happens when relationships get dissolved or need to be resolved or just dissolve on their own. And this last talk is really about a further layer of complication.
Right.
And that is when the presence of mental illness, when mental illness enters the relationship, adds another layer of complexity.
Right. And just so that we kind of know where we're starting from. When we're talking about mental illness for much of this, we're going to be talking about mood disorders like depression, maybe mild bipolar, anxiety disorders, ADHD,
obsessive compulsive
OCD
disorders.
Types of things, some of those kinds of things.
That are really more irritants to the partner.
Right. That have their own set of challenges, but doesn't necessarily affect the way in which reality is overall interpreted. You know, we're not going to have being in a relationship with somebody with a psychotic disorder, for example, very different set of circumstances, very different set of needs. Having a relationship with somebody who has Alzheimer's is a very different, requires a very different set of considerations and things. So we're not necessarily going into that domain.
Whenever I look at you like this, like I'm looking at you, it means I want to say something.
I see that.
Right?
Uh-huh.
You're a movie buff.
Right.
Okay. What was the movie about the mathematician?
A Beautiful Mind?
A Beautiful Mind.
Right.
Okay. Or
Nash, right?
Right. Or Rain Man.
Right.
Okay. Those are severe.
Right.
Okay. And that, so we're not talking about those kind of severe things.
Right.
We're talking more like Jack Nicholson in
As Good As It Gets.
As Good As It Gets.
Right.
Where quirky, strange, odd, but manageable.
Right.
Okay. So we're talking about As Good As It Gets, not A Beautiful Mind.
Right.
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 Okay.
Yeah. So just that in consideration as we're getting started. Because again, psychotic disorders like schizophrenia that was in A Beautiful Mind or autism. Like in Rain Man, those have very different very different requirements as it relates to what you're going to have to do.
What a spouse would have to do
as a spouse,
That's an obligation that's a topic for another discussion.
That puts you in the position of caregiver.
You're really
as
a
opposed
caregiver.
as opposed to a partner.
Right.
So, so as it relates to the things that we'll be talking about, like depression and anxiety and some of those things, we're going to talk about it from two different perspectives. So we have sort of three broad categories or headings for our conversation today.
Right.
And the first is we're going to talk about the importance of from the perspective of the person with the mental illness. Then we're going to talk about the relationship from the perspective of the person, of the partner, the person without the mental illness.
Right.
And then we're going to talk about some things that are real hindrances, some real limitations to the potential success of a relationship in this kind of scenario. So we have these sort of three broad topics that we're going to hit today.
Okay.
So first, let's talk about from the perspective of the person with the mental illness.
Right.
Now, this isn't easy to talk about because we don't like, I don't like talking about mental illness from the perspective of major limitations. You know, people with depression, they can, many of them can still work. Do you have something right. that you're saying? No, oh, you're looking at me like that again.
I'm just listening.
From the perspective of the person with mental illness, you know, many times they can still work, they can still function, they can still make decisions, they can still do right. things. They just have these symptoms that interfere with some of the things that they want to do, some of the things right. they need to do, and just overall life functioning at times. Mm-hmm. It's not necessarily a global dysfunction,
right.
But it does limit some things. And so what we want to sort of begin with is that the person with the mental illness has to understand and be at right. a position in their life where they appreciate that they need to remain in treatment.
Right. That they do have this disorder.
Right. They have okay. to acknowledge that they have right. these issues.
And
receive treatment.
Right.
They have to, you know, whether it's medication, whether it's therapy, whatever the treatment is that they are pursuing, right. they need to remain in treatment. That's you know, right. the biggest complication in relationships like this is if the partner with mental illness decides to stop receiving treatment.
That's right. You know, now that I'm married, now that I have children, maybe I don't need my medication right. anymore.
Right.
Big mistake.
Right.
You know, yeah. No, you have to maintain treatment.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because when you get married, you're happy. When you have children, right. you're happy, at least initially. And and so you have to remember that happiness oftentimes is a temporary response to right. something that you did, and life will go back to what it was, and sometimes right. with more stress. Mm-hmm. And so deciding to end treatment because you've had some wonderful yeah. life experience is not a very healthy
not
thing
a good
to
idea.
Do.
Right. Right.
So the person with mental illness, you have to remain in treatment.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Second, you have to make sure that you inform your partner.
Right.
Now, what I mean by that is you don't want to, you know, go out on a first date with somebody and say, oh, by the way, here is my list of medications right. and my treatment schedule. You don't want to do that. But you do want to, as the relationship is growing, you want to be able to say, you know, I think it's important because we're getting pretty close. I think it's important that I let you know that, you know, mm-hmm. there are times when I really struggle with depression right. and it is really difficult for me to blah, 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 et cetera. You know, you right. really kind of go into it a little bit. Again, not on the first or even second or third date
no.
necessarily.
No.
You don't do that, mm-hmm. but you want to make sure that you inform the person of that.
If you're moving toward a significant relationship, whatever level, you do owe it to your partner mm-hmm. to explain initially.
Mm-hmm.
But you also need to inform your partner as to when, for example, let's say you do have a mood disorder that has cycles, like mm-hmm. a bipolar disorder. Well, if you know that October is a bad month for you,
right.
your partner needs to know
Absolutely.
That so that your partner can adjust accordingly.
Right.
If you know that July is your best month, mm-hmm. then that's the month that you want to take your
right.
vacations and try to do some fun things.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So, you know, you have to inform the partner twice, once initially, but once on a regular basis.
Right.
You know.
Now, when we started this out, we said we were talking about mood disorders and anxiety mm-hmm. and things like that. But there are times we used to have a diagnosis, and unfortunately, we don't have this diagnosis technically anymore, but a diagnosis called Asperger's.
Right.
And Asperger's now is sort of incorporated in the autism spectrum disorders. Mm-hmm. But many people with Asperger's, you know, function relatively well. They can communicate with other people. They can interact with other people. They work and function relatively well. But when it comes to relationships, they really have a difficult time.
Right.
And it's important, this point of informing the partner, it is sometimes really imperative early in the relationship for those who have some of those social limitations.
Right.
That's the main thing that people with Asperger's and what we'll just call high-functioning autism, that's really the area that those individuals struggle, because it's an impairment of social interactions. And so they're in a scenario where they don't understand some of the social cues. They don't maybe have, they have some difficulty appreciating how to respond to things that are happening socially. Mm-hmm. And so it's important that they say, hey, look, you know, or maybe early in the relationship say, you know, sometimes I have a little bit of a hard time understanding some of these social nuances. You know, so I may say things that you don't expect, or that, right, you know, some people see as unusual, but I can't help it. If you tell me that I'm doing that, then I know how to fix it, right, because I'm in treatment and I'm mm-hmm. getting some support with that. But, you know, I it really helps me if you let me know that that's happening,
right,
so that I can correct it and change it.
Right.
So, mm-hmm. so it's really important, that you inform
keep
the partner.
Keep them informed.
That.
Right.
Right. Mm-hmm. And going along with what you said, the third piece is identifying your triggers.
That's right.
You know, identifying things that set you off, right, so that A, your partner can identify that those triggers, and B, so that you can make sure that you work to avoid those triggers.
That's right. I was thinking about a couple that I'm working, well, I'm working with them now, and the husband has pretty significant ADHD, adult ADHD, and takes medication, does fine at work, but guess what?
Wears off.
When he gets home at night, he's got untreated ADHD,
yeah,
and he makes his wife crazy. You know, she says, he makes me crazy at night, because and we have to keep reminding ourselves he has ADHD.
Right.
The medication wears off, and he's going to display some of those symptoms, right, that he doesn't display. It's not that he likes being at work more than he likes being at home. It's that the medication is worn off.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
So one of the triggers is when the medication wears off, we have to go into a different mode.
Right. Mm-hmm. And it should make sense, because if you have, let's say that you have an allergy to shellfish,
yeah, right,
and your partner says, well, hey, let's go to the seafood restaurant and eat.
Let's go have some
crab
claws.
You would probably tell them, you know, hey, I have this allergy.
Right.
That's a trigger for my allergic reaction.
Right.
You'd want to do the same thing for mental health issues. You know,
right,
I really don't like to do that, or if
right,
I do that, it really affects me, and so I really need to avoid doing those kinds of things.
Yeah.
Let's do this instead, you know, and then offer an option.
I know a fellow who cannot get on an elevator.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Well, then don't stay at the 34th floor,
right,
of the hotel. You know, get one on the first or second floor that you can both walk up, and don't make those plans, because
right,
he's not going to be able to get into an elevator.
Right. Yeah, so you have to be able to communicate that and identify your own triggers,
right,
so that you can communicate that as well.
Yeah, you remembered, I can't eat seafood, and I can't eat seafood on the 34th floor of a hotel.
That's right.
You know, so, you know, identify the triggers and work with those.
Right.
Okay.
Now, the fourth thing is, as the person with the mental illness, you want to avoid using the mental health issue,
right,
as an excuse for decisions or things that happen. It may go over okay the first time or two, but it really,
yeah,
partners really struggle with the idea of, well, I can't help it, it's because of my mental illness. That does not work very well in most relationships. You can't just use that as a way to, I don't want to use the excuse, but it really is, you know,
it's
using
sort of
it
is
as a rationale, or saying,
right,
I can't help it, it's my mental illness.
Teenagers do that all the time, you know,
right,
preteens and teenagers. Oh, I can't help it, I have ADHD. I can't help it, I have bipolar disorder. No, that's
right,
that's not, no, you don't get a bye.
Right.
We all know that, but there are treatments and there are things,
right,
that we need to be doing.
Absolutely.
So, no, you're not going to get a buy on this one.
Right.
It means we have to work a little bit harder.
Right.
But we're not going to give you an excuse.
And it's not to say that it wasn't because of the mental health issue, that, because
right,
it could be. Mm-hmm. But you can say, you know, I'm sorry, I did that, and I don't have an explanation or excuse why, but let me work to fix it.
And all week long, we've been talking about solving problems.
Right.
You know, how do we solve our problems? So, you know, if you're, well, you know, I have ADHD, so I can't. No, you have ADHD, so how are we going to solve this,
right,
problem,
so,
that occurs at 8 o'clock,
right,
at night?
We have, yeah, to create some structure.
That's
to,
right,
prevent that from happening.
Exactly.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Now, the last thing from the perspective of the person with the mental health issue is
yeah,
what I think is a pretty challenging,
right,
thing for
mm-hmm,
many. And that is, you cannot allow yourself to become dependent on your partner for stability.
That's right.
You know, I know a lot of individuals with mental health issues that are in relationships, and they say, well, you know, my partner's not here, or my partner isn't doing this, or my partner isn't doing that, and so that's why I'm in the middle of this episode. And you know, having a partner is great, and it absolutely helps with symptoms sometimes, but you can't allow yourself to be in a situation where if that person isn't able to fill that role at that particular moment, that your symptoms get out of control. Right. You can't allow yourself to be in that situation. You can't say, well, you know, I really needed her at that moment and she wasn't there. Because that, and we'll kind of get to this with for the partner's perspective in just a second, but that puts your partner in a precarious situation that they're not going to be able to handle very well.
Right.
Because how do you handle that?
That's right.
How do you say, well, I can't be there all the time, and I can't give you or provide for you what you need when I don't know that you need it?
That's right. And you when you're in a relationship, you're in a relationship with a partner. You're not hiring a caretaker.
Right.
You're not hiring a psychiatric nurse practitioner. You're not hiring a psychiatrist. You're getting into a relationship with a partner. So you can't then ask that person to assume a different role as your caretaker.
Right.
Right.
Right. Mm-hmm. So you have to avoid that. There will be times when he or she will be there and will be able to help you.
Right.
But there will be times when they're not. Mm-hmm. And you can't evaluate the quality of your relationship.
Right.
And place your stability dependent on that other person.
Right.
Because that it's not going to work consistently in your favor.
Right.
And so you have to avoid those
and
those
it will
traps.
Breed and it will breed resentment.
Absolutely.
On your partner. If your partner feels the pressure to become your caretaker, to become your stabilizing influence, that could lead to resentment.
Right. No. Mm-hmm. And you know, I always think about these scenarios where you know the your partner comes home from work and he had a really rough day at work that day, and then gets home and the wife is depressed and she says, well, I need you to help me feel better. I need you to help get me out of this.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, I just, you know,
I finished 10 hours of work
and I needed some recovery. I needed some attention, something to recoup and recharge my batteries.
Recharge mine.
And
that's right.
Now it's just not going to end up very well for either of you. So you can't allow yourself to be in that situation where, you know, you're dependent on the other person for your stability. That's mm-hmm. that's just not going to work out.
Right.
Now, as we shift to the person, to the partner,
right.
There's some things that person has to consider as well.
Mm-hmm.
The first thing is that person, the partner, needs to be involved in some capacity
mm-hmm.
with the other person's mental health treatment.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. So if your partner has depression or bipolar or anxiety or something, you need to be involved in some way to provide some input to the therapist or to provide some other perspective to the treatment.
Input and insight. You know, you have to be insightful. To be insightful, to be helpful, you have to know about the disorder.
Right.
You have to be involved in your partnership. You've taken on, you know, you've assumed responsibility
mm-hmm.
by saying, yes, I do.
Right.
I know that you have obsessive compulsive disorder, but I can overlook that because I want to be with you. Okay, that's fine. But you have assumed this responsibility. Now you have to be involved in the treatment so that you can be of assistance, because otherwise you're just going to get frustrated and angry with what look like quirky behaviors, and you're going to say, I've had enough of this. No, you have to be involved in their treatment.
Right. Mm-hmm. And this is an issue that we've discussed many times before with HIPAA.
Right.
You know, HIPAA, which is a wonderful rule in many
in
circumstances,
some respects,
but is often very challenging when it comes to your significant other, because technically speaking, unless your spouse signs off and gives you permission to talk with their therapist, and there's still some limitations even then,
right,
you're not allowed to talk with the therapist. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, if I have a significant other, if my wife was really struggling with anxiety or depression or something, and she was going through a really serious episode, mm-hmm. unless I have some involvement in that treatment, her therapist, her psychiatrist, or whoever she's seeing, is not allowed to talk to me.
Not only will they not, they're not allowed by right. law. They're prohibited by law from discussing the case with you.
Right.
Even if you're a caretaker and a caregiver, they're prohibited by right. law from talking to you. It's happened to all of us.
Right. So it really is an issue, and so it's imperative that as the person, you know, when you have a partner with mental health issues, mm. that you're involved in some way in their treatment,
right.
Because it creates that a bit of a relationship with the treatment provider, mm-hmm. so that you can have that communication.
Right.
Now, the other side of that is, mm-hmm. oftentimes it means that you need to have some treatment also.
Right.
It doesn't necessarily mean that you have a mental health issue. It just means that you need some support to be able to manage some of the stress and frustration that comes along with the symptoms that your partner may be experiencing.
That's right.
And what that means is, you know, if you have if you have a partner with depression, well, for some people, it's really frustrating to say, well, why can't we just go to the store?
Right.
Why can't you just get out of your pajamas?
Right.
And so we can go to the store, or so we can go to the movies, mm-hmm. or so we can do this or that.
Right.
Getting treatment for yourself, just to have some place where you can voice some of those frustrations, and maybe more importantly, educate yourself about mm-hmm. what's going on with your partner. That leads to a better understanding. It leads to more tolerance and acceptability, and allows you to be able to manage some of those storms.
Right. It helps with perspective taking. You know, I mean, mm-hmm. Sometimes you just have to sit down and go through everything, and you remind yourself that okay, this right. is what. This is what I'm dealing with, and I can handle it, and I understand yeah. it better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, the third thing is the same as the third thing from right. the other person's perspective, and that is you got to identify your partner's right. triggers.
Mm-hmm.
Your partner may do very well to identify his or her own triggers,
right.
or many of them, but there may be other triggers that they mm-hmm. don't, that they're not fully cognizant of.
Right.
And so you need to be able to identify mm-hmm. What those triggers are so that you can help them as well. So if that means that, well, when we stay at this place or when we do these activities, you seem to mm-hmm. really have a difficult it's time worse, recovering right. from that. Mm-hmm. We need to then avoid those kinds of right. situations, or we need to that's at least right. be prepared for those situations so that you can manage them better.
Mm-hmm.
So as the partner, you want to make sure that you identify as best you can some of those same triggers and, mm-hmm. and triggers that they may not be aware of.
Right, right.
The fourth thing is, again, same as the fourth thing for the other person. Don't use your partner's mental health issue as an excuse.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing that leads to arguments more than saying, well, look, I don't know if you're depressed right now or not, but you're really unreasonable. I don't know if it's because of your mental health problem, but man, I'm really having a hard time talking. That doesn't lead to a happy resolution. Mm-hmm. You know, don't use their mental health issue as an excuse for any of the challenges that you're having. You know, you don't want to say, oh, there goes your social problem again.
Right.
There goes your depression. Of course, it's going to ruin Christmas because you're depressed again. You don't want to do those kinds of things, because, and that should be somewhat of a no-brainer, but it happens.
No, it happens. And don't, when you argue,
mm-hmm.
and you're going to argue, because
right.
we all do, you can't use the mental illness as one of your weapons.
Right.
And say, well, you know, you're the crazy one. You're the one with BIPOC. You're the one who's depressed. You're the one with OCD.
Right.
So this is your problem. No, can't do that.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You can't.
That's got to be a rule of engagement.
Right. Absolutely.
You cannot do it. Cannot right. take that one out.
Right. And the last thing here for the person, for the partner of the person right. with mental illness, is you have to avoid assuming all of the responsibilities in the relationship.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Just because your partner's depressed, just because they have OCD, or just because they have some mental health issue, does not mean that they're incapable or that they're off the hook from mm-hmm. having to meet some of the expectations and responsibilities in the relationship.
That's right.
You can't put yourself in a situation where you're making all the decisions. that's going to breed resentment. That's going to breed frustration. That you are not that your partner's parent.
Right.
You are not your partner's caregiver, unless you're taking on that role,
right.
And you both agree to that. And so, because of that, you don't say, "Well, you know, this is all that you can handle."
That's
right.
This is all you get.
There was a movie 10 or 15 years ago, and I can't remember. I can't remember the name of it, but it was with Meg Ryan. And Meg Ryan in the movie, she had a substance abuse issue, and I think Andy Garcia played her husband, but I can't remember now. This, and I would have looked it up, but this just came to my mind. And in that movie, she had the substance abuse issue, alcohol problem, and the kids came to her one morning and said something, and he goes, "You know what? This, you know, it's all you can do right now just to handle your coffee." Mm-hmm. That didn't go very well. It didn't lead to any good,
right.
happy things in that relationship, because he was assuming all the responsibilities, and he was assuming, therefore, that she was incapable.
That's right.
And it just leads to resentment and frustration, because they are capable of making decisions. They are capable of,
right.
and they have feelings, and they, you know, I feel like we're talking about in humans or something. It's not
right.
that they're incapable of any of this stuff, but we assume sometimes that they are because they have these challenges.
That's right.
So we have to watch out for that.
Right. We assume not only a partner can assume the responsibilities, but also all the decision making.
Right.
And remember that this person does have a brain and they're able to make some decisions. So you can't just assume that you're the only person in the relationship who's capable of making
right.
a decision. Because even if the decision is correct,
right.
it's still going to lead to resentment
right.
because you're imposing it on the other person.
Right. So you have to mm-hmm. have those conversations. All
right.
the communication stuff
that's
and everything
right.
still is important. It's just...
Mm-hmm. And that's what we said at the beginning, that you have all the same issues.
Right.
You're just going to have to work a little bit harder.
Right.
Because they're going to... This other thing is going to continue to be an influence in your
right.
relationship.
Right.
But you still have to do all the same communicating and trust and
mm-hmm.
all those things have to be intact.
Absolutely. So, all right. So now let's talk a little bit then about some factors, some things that make it to where these relationships won't work
right.
or that the likelihood of success for these relationships. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Is
and this is really important, because how do you know when maybe you've exceeded your capacity to
right.
deal with it.
Right.
One or the other in the relationship isn't going to be able to manage it
right.
anymore.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
The first thing is, the person with the mental health issue
right.
has to be aware and accept the fact
right.
that there is a mental health issue present.
That's right.
You know, it's that insight, that awareness, that accepting
mm-hmm.
of the presence of the mental health issue is imperative,
mm-hmm.
because if you have OCD
right
and you
that's a good example.
You adamantly
mm-hmm.
refuse to admit that you
yeah.
have OCD
mm-hmm.
but yet you are getting at your partner every time he puts the dishes in the wrong place
or a drawer isn't closed or a door isn't shut
right
know.
If you're getting at your partner every time something that he or she may view
right.
as insignificant
right.
and you're getting at him about those things every time,
mm-hmm.
That's not going to go very
right.
well. It's just not going to lead to a relationship that's going to be able to grow and in a healthy way, because there's going to, again, just be lots of arguments that are unresolvable. There's no way to resolve that.
Or an official diagnosis hasn't been made,
right.
but all the symptoms are there, and you say, "Honey, this feels like it's a little, you know, like
right.
this is really abnormal behavior now, what you're doing." And the partner just refuses
right.
to acknowledge and just say, "Well, you're crazy. You don't know what you're talking about. You know, don't try to die." You can argue and deny that you have it, but if these
mm-hmm.
symptoms are a problem in your relationship, perhaps you should consider doing it. And if your partner won't
right.
consider them,
right.
Then perhaps you've reached a point where this isn't going to work out.
Right. Yeah.
Denial or refusal.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Yeah. If the person the person with the mental health issue has to have some insight and awareness of their mental health. I mean, it goes back to the first thing that we said that the person with mental illness has to do, and that is remain in treatment. You have to be receiving treatment for it to be successful. And if the person is unaware or refuses to accept that there's a mental health concern present, well, then that's it's not going to get treatment and it leads to other problems. So the second thing is that it is if the person is treatment resistant. So you may know that we have lots of people that we know who have mental health issues, accept the fact that they have mental health issues, but refuse treatment.
Right.
They say, oh yeah, no, I know I'm depressed, but no, I'm not going to, you know, I don't go talk to anybody about it, or I'm not going to get any medication, or I'm not going to do anything about it. And that introduces another set of issues because, you know, if we think about it from the partner's perspective, here we are, a person who accepts the fact that they have an issue, accepts the fact that they have a problem, but refuses to do anything about it.
Right. Yes, I know that I have obsessive compulsive disorder, but I'm not going to take medication.
And I know that it makes me yell at you when you don't close the drawer the right way, or you don't do this and don't do that, but I'm not going to pursue treatment. I'm not going to do anything about it.
I'm not going to fix this, no, regardless of the consequences.
Right. Yeah. You just need to make sure that you do this or you do that.
And that's right.
Again, it doesn't bode well for the relationship.
Yep.
Now, the final thing shifts and becomes the aspect from the partner's perspective, and that is, these relationships are not going to work well if the partner is unable to adjust.
Right.
You know, if I know that my partner is allergic to shellfish and I put shrimp in everything that I cook, well, that's not going to go well. If you know that your partner has these particular triggers, but it doesn't matter to you because that's the way that you want to do it,
right,
it's not going to be very effective. It's not going to be... it's not going to help things, and it's not certainly not going to lead to a positive relationship.
Nope.
So you have to, as the partner, you have to be willing to adjust and shift and make concessions and understand, again, that sort of that insight and that self-education about what's going on with your partner's mental health issues so that you can make decisions and you can do things that's better for them and better for the relationship.
And if you're unable to do that,
if you're unable, then that's when you step back and you say, okay, is this relationship one that I need to be in?
That's right. If I can't do that, if I'm not willing or able,
right,
I might not be willing or I might not be able to make these adjustments, then perhaps this relationship, we shouldn't try to continue this relationship.
Right. So, yeah. Mm-hmm. And that may suck for the person with the mental health issue. That person may say, no, I really want to make this work. Mm-hmm. But if you're not in the long run for both of your stability and sanity and all that, the relationship probably shouldn't happen.
Right. Because I don't think it's going to get better.
Right.
If you reach that point, I don't think there's any reason to assume that, well, with time it will get better. I think with time it's probably going to get worse.
Right. Now, the last thing that I want to mention is the importance of communication as it relates to decision making. You know, when it comes to some of these issues, you may need to have a conversation with your significant other somewhat early in the relationship about some big decisions. For example, do you want to... there may be a time when your symptoms are flaring, that your symptoms are really present, and you want to be able to have a way to communicate that to your significant other, so that if big decisions have to be made during those episodes, that they have an understanding of how to adjust, how to delay making a decision, or how to make a decision that's in you guys' best interest, or that the person will make a decision that's in your best interest during that time when the person with mental health issues may not be able to do so. Right. Another really important, and this one is a really touchy topic, decisions about having children. There are a lot of people with mental health issues who, especially if they have a long history of treatment, will say, you know what, I don't want to have children because I know that there's a genetic component to this, and I don't want to pass on that to... you need to make sure you communicate that with your partner early in the relationship, because your partner may want to have kids.
That's right.
May want to have biological kids. Mm-hmm. Don't want to adopt or make... do it in that way.
Right.
And so you have to communicate that with them as earlier in the relationship, so that you don't you don't get down that line to where, okay, now we're married and, you know, let's have kids, and oh, wait a minute, I don't want to have kids.
That's right.
We don't want that to be a surprise or something, you know, be an issue later in the relationship.
And if you do have children, you have to be prepared that your children may exhibit the same symptoms.
Right.
Okay. You have to be prepared for that.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So there's those kinds of things that you have to be able to communicate early in the relationship. And if you don't see eye to eye on that, that's a thing that to consider as to whether or not you're going to remain in that relationship. I mean, if you have, if your significant other has OCD or has bipolar disorder or Asperger's disorder or autism or something like that, and doesn't want to have kids, but you are adamant that you do, it may just, that may just not be, no matter how you, how much you care for them, you're going to have to make a decision.
Somebody has to make a decision.
Right.
That's right.
And it's, how do you say this? If a person enters the relationship saying, I don't want to have kids, the likelihood of them changing in a healthy way to say, okay, I've decided that I want to have, I mean, that's a big decision.
Right.
And they may concede and say, okay, well, we can have kids. But that doesn't necessarily mean that they would be as committed to having kids as you would be.
Right.
And that's not a slam on anybody. No. It's just the reality that, you know, they're going to take on something that, you know, they entered the relationship being being somewhat avoidant of. And that changes it. So there's just a lot of things to consider. Having a relationships by themselves are complicated.
Exactly.
And so when you introduce a mental health issue or a mental illness into a relationship,
even a mild, even mild symptoms,
can
really complicate
An
already complicated situation.
Absolutely.
So
it's not a whole lot different than when you introduce serious health related conditions.
That's right.
But it is a little bit different. I mean,
it just adds more complexity.
There are things that you can't see. You know, when you meet somebody for the first time and they have a serious health related issue, you may be able to see that right away and know that as you're getting it. If they have some of these mental health issues, you may not be able to see it right away, and so it leads to other. You just have to be aware of it differently. Yeah. So, all right.
Okay. Friday, Saturday. Saturday.
You've been off all week long.
I told you. Thanksgiving.
You've been off all week long.
That week of Thanksgiving was disorienting for me, time-wise.
But that's it for this week. So we can get back on a regular schedule next week and you'll be
When do we start?
Monday.
What about Sunday?
Oh, well, I'll be here. So.
When is Sunday?
See, folks, this is what I'm saying, you know, relationships. All right.
So that's it for this week.
So I hope you guys have a great rest of your weekend and a great week next week and a good, you know, last few weeks of the year.
Man, get ready for the holidays. Mm-hmm. You know, be mindful, be careful.
Yeah. Okay. So we'll be back next week for more episodes, more topics and discussions, and hopefully some people will get the days right as we're going through. And I'll see you then.
Pull out my calendar today and just reorient. I'm going to reorient myself.
That's right.
Over the next day or so.
Yeah. So, until next time, I'm Dr. Bernie.
I'm Dr. Richard.
Stay happy and healthy, and forget to be afraid.